Just heard a version of the St. Louis Blues as recorded on an album called The Sunshine of My Soul. We heard Jackie Byard at the piano, Elvin Jones on drums, and my guest, David Eisenson, was featured on bass. David Eisenson joined us Tuesday of this week at this time, and on Tuesday we talked about his music. As you know, he is a bass player, and he spent most of the 1960s playing and recording with the Ornette Coleman Trio. When the trio broke up in 1968, David explored his interest in psychotherapy. He went back to school and received his doctorate in psychotherapy, and he now has a private practice. In 1977, he started a group called Pot Smokers Anonymous. As a psychotherapist, David found that many of his clients were smoking lots of dope every day, and when they tried to stop, they couldn't. So we started this group, Pot Smokers Anonymous, and that's what we're going to talk about today. Our phone lines will be open, and we'd like to hear from you. I'd like it if you can give us a call and tell us about your experiences with marijuana. It's certainly a very subjective thing, smoking dope. So I'd like to know if you've had experiences similar to those that we'll hear David describing, or if you smoke dope and have never found it to be a problem, if the experience of smoking has changed for you with time. You'll be anonymous when you call, so you don't have to worry about that aspect of things. You might want to take down our phone number. We're at area code 215 215- 387-6660. Okay, that's 387. No, 387-6661, okay? Erase the 666. 387-6661 is our phone number. David Eisenson, welcome back to Fresh Air. I'm really glad that you were able to make it today. I said I invited you back with a little bit of hesitancy on Tuesday, not knowing if you'd be able to make it or not. Well, Tuesday we had a real nice time talking about your music, and today we're on to a different aspect of your work. Can you tell us about some of the, you know, experiences that you had with clients or personal experiences that led to the formation of the group that you formed, Pot Smokers Anonymous?
Yes, I'd be happy to. If I sound a little more intense today, it's because we are concerning ourselves directly with life itself and how we perceive it and how we experience it. And then that is why I come on strong about this particular, more strongly about this particular subject. For example, yes, it's very personal if you like X brand of music and Y brand of music, but for an ongoing life, there isn't any allowances to be made. So that's what brought me into that attitude is what brought me into thinking that I had to develop a program that would deal specifically with this problem, because I feel pot smokers are a special breed of people in that it's a substance that very little is known about at this point. As a matter of fact, when people call up and join Pot Smokers Anonymous, I usually feel a great deal of admiration for them, because they're coming and they're joining of their own free will. Judges and saying, go to this program or go to jail. And unlike an alcoholic who's reached the obsessive compulsive state where they're is completely out of control, they are there at least with that kind of a control. We do know that it is not the benevolent substance we once thought it was. More research is going to be done in this current year on the pharmacological aspects in the past 200 years.
You know, it's an interesting thing with substances. Like, you can abuse any substance. I mean, like, you need food to stay alive. On the other hand, you can be a glutton and eat to the point where you murder yourself with food. If you don't eat, though, you're gonna die the same death. Do you think it's any different with marijuana? You know that it's maybe not the substance itself, but that some people, you know, there's people who can abuse anything. You know.
Yes, that's true. However, I wonder what happened to the question and promise of a substance-free life, where I didn't need or want or wish or desire or felt compelled to use junk food, as well as alcohol, as well as tobacco, as well as marijuana, as well as cocaine. Interestingly enough, they all have something in common. They all come from a leafy product grown in our earth. And the fact is that 30 years ago, for example, we didn't know, we meaning scientists, didn't know how harmful smoking tobacco was. And by that time, it had already become a habit. So that's why it's important for people to really start to address themselves to what they're doing with their lives. And that's where Pot Smokers Anonymous comes into. For example, in my own practice as a therapist, I remember a woman who was very successful in her career. Yet, she had problems with her personal life. She couldn't find a man that she wanted to have a relationship. This was done. Finally, she started to have a relationship with a man who was, well, 20 years her senior. It's not a problem. I can't be chauvinistic about age. But what was the problem was that she was accepting this relationship with a person who was married and was not going to get unmarried to have a relationship with her. She was allowing herself to be used. And I would ask her, Veronica, what happens to you when you're with this man, and what your sense of values and your sense of yourself? And then she looked at me and smiled and said, I smoke dope and take a vacation from life. That hit me really hard, because I was concerned about this human being, as I am about every human being. My goal, by the way, is for world peace, and world peace is individual peace multiplied.
I'd be interested in hearing, like, you know, do you still smoke now? Do you smoke at all anymore?
No, I don't think I will smoke. Forever is a long time, but right now I'm feeling better than I ever felt my entire life. I have to smile, because I think smoking brings you down, when you're really feeling good about yourself. See, smoking, what smoking does, or use of any of these substances, this is only one symptom, is it gives you a kind of a mini lobotomy. It does is it reduces the anxiety, the fears, the angers, the emotions that you're having difficulty in dealing with, and it suspends them. It helps you avoid them. However, because it's a substance that you've got to repeat, it doesn't really do anything to allow you to grow. So what I have learned as a result of my own experience and putting together this emotional recognition course is how to use these feelings. So now when I become angry, I use it to take me to a better place. I don't medicate myself. So I'm clean and I feel wonderful about it for myself.
You did smoke, though, before.
Yes.
When did you
first time I smoked a joint, I was 20 years old, living in Pittsburgh. And some older people that I had met that said, hey, try this stuff. And I tried it. By that time, of course, I had already fallen into the grasp, the hands of the advertising of cigarette smoking being a good substance. I mean, in those days, sports figures were announcing, I smoke this and I never get short of breath and it makes me feel better and so on and so on. So I smoked and I didn't get high. I didn't have an effect, and I had to work hard.
I think most people don't get high the first time.
Most people don't, and that's what's so interesting, because it's something you have to learn how to do, which makes it on the other hand, I'm happy to say that people can learn to not do it, learn to live without the substance, too. Although, you see, in Pot Smokers Anonymous, we don't ask you to give up. We don't ask you to use willpower. We ask you about your motivation instead.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we ask you to think of what you're going to get. And if you were to ask me, what do you get? The answer is you get your real sense of self. And that, to me, is a beautiful promise.
I'd like to remind you that we're interested in hearing your reactions to what's being said on the air. So why don't you give us a call at 387-6661. We won't be trying to really pry into your personal life and ask you, you know, things that you wouldn't want to talk about on the air. However, you know, you will be anonymous, and if you'd like to give us a call and tell us about your own experiences with marijuana and whether you're agreeing or disagreeing with what David Eisenson is saying about dope here this afternoon, we'd like to hear from you. The number is 215, that's the area code, 387-6661. Again, that's 387-6661.
I'd like to share with you and your audience three danger signals to be on the lookout for. One is a loss of energy. There's something going on with your body when that happens as a result of smoking. The second one is confused thinking. For example, people at Pot Smokers Anonymous have said, I went to call someone up and I forgot who I was calling up. I forgot what I was going to get from one room to another. And the third, which is really a biggie, is loss of goal-oriented activity, of ambition, clinically known as the amotivational syndrome, not having to get up and go. And this particularly affects younger people, who I feel are the ones who are going to be the real victims, because they're not using that energy to take them to a better place.
Did you experience any of this yourself, you know, in the days when you were smoking? You said you started when you were 20. I imagine you didn't stop until pretty recently.
I stopped earlier this year. I have a history of about 26 years, quite frankly, and it's something that it brings up pain, because when I look back on my own life, I think of the times that I wasted, and there is nothing more painful to think that I've wasted time. And that's one of the reasons I'm hoping that we'll be able to communicate with the audience to say, look, you needn't suffer needlessly. Suffer you may have to, but suffer needlessly and do things in spite of your smoking.
Okay, well, we're at 387-6661. If you'd like to give us a call, we're going to go to the telephones now. Hi, this is Fresh Air, and you're on the air.
Okay, I've been smoking marijuana for about 12 years or so. Starting when I'm about 17, and the other day I saw a few young ladies down on Walnut Street while I was in Philadelphia smoking a joint, and they were giggling away. It reminded me of the days when I used to giggle away smoking marijuana. Of course, those times have radically changed, and now it turns out I smoke marijuana and I become paranoid, fearful, feeling inept, And at times, when I was still involved in marriage, extremely short-tempered and, just short-tempered. It's amazing this change in these new manifestations under the influence of marijuana. But however, there's still that urge to smoke a joint. You know, I work in a casino, and a little joint after work is very relaxing, but then comes the paranoia and the fear and all of that. It's a very peculiar reaction. But nevertheless, the urge still is there, even though when I smoke it, I don't feel good.
Is it the kind of, I don't know if you've ever smoked cigarettes, but I mean, is it anything like the kind of uncontrollable urge where you really have to like struggle with yourself to not do it? I mean, when you don't feel like smoking, is it easy for you to just, well, not smoke?
Well, it's not a matter of not feeling like smoking, it's a matter of feeling like smoking. It's not like, well, I don't feel like smoking a joint, so I won't. It's a matter of, I feel like smoking a joint, but I know I'm going to get paranoid when I smoke it, but I smoke it anyway.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's strange how this has changed over the years. And now, in line with people smoking now, it seems like they're just, you know, becoming intoxicated and out of touch. And I would like to, I think I'll stop myself soon. I have to. I'm running out.
Well,
no choice.
Approximately, or less than 5% of the people who have attempted to stop are really successful, because all of us didn't really plan on getting into smoking grass regularly. We did it in a random fashion, and that's why you need a strategy to help you stop correctly. However, that's one point. There are two other points I wanted to share with this gentleman and with you, too. Relaxing after work is one of the most popular reasons and or excuses for smoking, so you fit into that category. And in Pot Smokers Anonymous, which is helpful in that you recognize you're not alone. There are other people with your problem, and they have the same problem, and that gives you some...
Is a paranoia a common manifestation of smoking?
Now, what happens with paranoia is that, and with pot, is that it brings down your defenses, and up come other problems that you may already have. It's not inherent in the substance.
Mm-hmm.
Someone in group once said, "The flower children came and went and left the pot behind." So that's what you're seeing, and that 12 or so years ago, pot had another little thrill for you, but now it's no longer serving the same needs for you. And I wish you all the luck in the world, and I hope you do it. And if you need any help, don't hesitate to call us. We'll be glad. We're there for you. We want you to win.
Good enough.
Well, thanks a lot for calling. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye. Hi, this is Fresh Air, and you're on the air.
Yes, Terry. Terry, I just wanted to make a few comments about my own experiences that I had with grass.
Good.
I was smoking for about 10 years, and the entire while I was married, I enjoyed it considerably because I found it was a method of escaping from a lot of reality or hiding reality from myself. But I also found later on that what I was doing was actually destroying my relationship with my family. I wasn't able to cope with the frustrations of having children around me not doing exactly what I wanted to do when I wanted them to do something. And I wasn't really able to tune into them completely as human beings while I was smoking because I was too much caught up in my own little trip of smoking.
So what did you do?
Well, I tried working on it for a while. I wasn't able to really get anywhere, and then all of a sudden we were camping up in Canada and I was smoking, and I said to myself, "My God, it's so beautiful around me. What am I smoking for?" And I, all of a sudden, I stopped. And ever since stopping, I was able to then start getting in touch with myself, and my feelings, and my relationship with my family increased, and it's intensified tremendously.
Mm-hmm.
I'm able to relate to my children as human beings instead of as somebody that occasionally is disrupting my peace.
So you decided that it was not really giving you what you wanted, and
were
just
really
able to stop, though.
I thought it was initially. I was able to rationalize it. And maybe initially it did, but maybe I wasn't looking for the same thing when I started smoking.
Well, listen, thanks very much for calling and for sharing some of your experience with us.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
By the way, I'm sure that everyone who's listening is not feeling, is not experiencing exactly this. So I'd also really like to hear from people who are still smoking and still enjoying it. I'm sure there are some of you listening now. We're at 387-6661. You know, an interesting thing, David, a lot of people say that, you know, like marijuana is a crutch, but like the people who've been calling, what you just expressed is that sometimes it brings out old facets of your own personality that you really may not want to confront, like paranoia, for instance. What kind of crutch is that? I mean, marijuana may be something, but it doesn't really seem like a crutch, does it? Because a crutch is something that helps you forget things that you want to forget.
Well, that's why people have a difficult time with the substance, because it isn't turning out to be as helpful as it once was. I have met people in my work over the past year in Pot Smokers Anonymous who I think, as a direct result of their smoking pot, avoided nervous breakdowns and somehow got them to survive whatever it really was, a crutch. However, they have outgrown it and they still can't get rid of it. One of the biggest obstacles, barriers, is the fear of stopping is, will I be able to function without it? Fear of the anxiety of dealing without it, because it's become an old buddy, an old friend. And like this last caller who had this wonderful insight of being there and with all the natural beauty and saying,
Okay, but what happened to the kind of thinking and, you know, do you think this is invalid of, well, I mean, if the country is really beautiful and if there's, you know, forests and trees and grass and all of this, then what is out of keeping with that to smoke an herb that grows as naturally as the trees that you are in touch with do? You know, it's really not necessarily contradicting experience, is it?
Yes, it is. It's contradicting the beauty and the magnificence of the human being as it has been created. The beautiful brain that you have between your ears, which is what the marijuana is affecting. And actually, we have all that we really need within our bodies to appreciate and enjoy what's going on. There's a price that we pay for enhancement. That price is your mind. To me, that's too big of a price to pay.
Okay, well, let's go back to the telephones. But by the way, if you're just joining us, I'm speaking with David Eisenson. Now, he was our guest Tuesday at this time on the show, and on Tuesday we were talking about his music career, playing with people like Paul Modian and Ornette Coleman and many others. Today we're talking about his work as a psychotherapist, specifically his work as the founder of Pot Smokers Anonymous. We're at 387-6661. There's a number of people waiting to talk with us on the telephone. Hi, this is Fresh Air, and you're on the air.
Hi, I guess I've been smoking for about 8 years or so, except for a brief period of about a year when I gave up smoking, and I'd just like to take issue with a few of the things that Mr. Eisenson has said so far. For example, I kind of object to talking about pot smokers as a group. I mean, people smoke pot for different reasons and in different amounts. For example, I have friends who smoke just individually an ounce maybe every 10 days or week or so. I, on the other hand, smoke maybe half an ounce a month. And I'm one of those people you were just talking about who's still smoking and still enjoying it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I find pot useful. Well, first of all, I often use pot as an escape to release anxieties, things like that, as you were talking about before. My comment about that is, so what?
Mm-hmm.
What about your anxieties? I mean, can you talk about dealing with your anxieties in a way that perhaps would be less circular, meaning that you resolve them and you continue to grow rather than medicate them and avoid them?
Well, I would say that's a valid comment if it were the case that I used pot consistently to avoid my anxieties or regularly. I mean, you know, an occasional temporary escape, I feel that if there's any harm done at all, from an amateur standpoint, as far as psychotherapy is concerned, if there's any harm done at all, it's more than outweighed by the benefit of just finding a release once in a while. I mean, for the same reason that we read fantasy literature, you know, and when maybe we should be reading philosophy or newspapers or something more productive.
Well, when you get through reading, the substance is no longer in your body. It may be in your mind, but when you smoke one joint, it stays in your body, in your bloodstream, rather, for 16 days. The THC content is stored in your body for much longer. If you were a woman nursing a child, you would be passing on this ingredient to your child, which would affect its growth. So to compare a psychoactive substance with literature is not really a fair comparison, although I see that in philosophically what you're talking about.
Well, you know, as I say, I'm completely uneducated as far as the physiological and psychological aspects of pot are concerned. I'll tell you what, let's move on to something else. The other thing that I was thinking of is that in trying to classify the ways that I use, that I have used pot and the ways that I use it now, the first thing that comes to my mind is that I almost never smoke alone. And generally when I'm at a party, if there's two or three other people there who smoke pot, I'll you know, at least come up with the idea of lighting up a joint. Don't you think the pot is at least slightly beneficial as far as facilitating social intercourse?
There are people who have switched over from alcohol to pot thinking that it was less dangerous. Notice I said less dangerous. And my response is that it's like changing chairs on the Titanic. When I need a substance to facilitate my verbalization or my social skills, I better check out myself, because that's not what it's all about. Substances have some medicinal things going.
I didn't say to make social intercourse possible. I just said to facilitate it.
That's what I said, facilitate it, right. I would check myself out. And that's what the emotional recognition skills that we learn at Pot Smokers Anonymous give you. So you don't need a substance.
Well, I also didn't say that I need it. I said that I use it for that reason.
Would you agree, David, that there's a difference between needing something and finding something pleasant if you have it around? You know, that at some point maybe you have to distinguish between a kind of need for something where you can't talk to someone at a party unless you have it, and thinking that, well, you know, things might just be a little more interesting, a little more better.
I think need is a very intense word, so I will, you need to breathe, you need to survive. Want might be better. However, to want something, a substance that will help you think better, help you feel better, I think already is admitting that there is some external agent that is beyond your own control that you have been able to function without.
Okay, listen, I want to thank you very much for calling. There's a number of other people waiting on the phone, but thanks a lot for your comments.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye now. We're going to get to how you run things at Pot Smokers Anonymous in a minute, but let's just take another phone call first. Hi, this is Fresh Air, and you're on the air.
Hi, I'd just like to comment about your three warning signs of smoking pot. I've been smoking it for about 6 years or so, and everyone I've ever run into, I think, has all those three. You're at parties, and, everybody's smoking, and it puts them to sleep, you know? It's loss of energy, I guess that one would be, and they want to, you know, you want to go out somewhere else, and nobody, no, I just want to sit here and sleep, you know? I think everyone who uses it fairly regularly has them. All three of them.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Hey, if you have these signs, you're probably in trouble. I think anybody who smokes them is in trouble. Anybody who smokes pot is probably in trouble.
Do you still smoke?
No. As a matter of fact, I've been straight for about 2 weeks, and no, I'm not kidding.
Uh-huh, okay.
And I heard this. My father called me up and told me maybe I should give a call, you know. But I have a lot more energy, I noticed, and it's not that I didn't know that before, though, you know. But I could never seem to hold out very long. But it's been about 2 weeks now.
Uh-huh. Okay, listen, thanks very much for calling.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, bye-bye now. Take care. We've got someone else waiting on the telephone. By the way, we're at 387-6661, and my guest in the studio is David Eisenson. Hello, this is Fresh Air, and you're on the air.
Hi, I'm curious to find out what you recommend for stopping someone who smokes a lot of pot. How do you prevent it? You wear a button that says, I quit.
Well, are you talking about yourself?
Yeah, I'm talking about myself and also a lot of friends I have.
Oh, well, It's a wonderful question. I really wish that I could answer it very simply and very. But I know that it ultimately comes down to doing it. To stopping is to stop. However, in Potsmokers Anonymous, we develop a strategy that enables you to understand why you smoke.
Maybe it's a good time to go into the strategy that you use, David.
Yeah. Well, at the first phase, it's called preparation, finding out why you smoke, what benefits you get out of smoking, and finding out why you'd want to stop smoking.
Mm-hmm.
And then we talk about the actual day when you are going to stop smoking, and we use the cold turkey method. The cold turkey method is the best method because you get immediate health benefits, and there are no more excuses. You've stopped, period. That's the end, finale. No more. Listen, we're coming up to New Year's, so there's the famous New Year's resolution. You got to determine your own motivation of why you want to stop smoking. And precisely that will help you understand why. Now, I don't want you to wait until our book comes out, which will be out in a year, and in the book that will give you the strategies as we use them in Potsmokers Anonymous, so that you can... Listen, you're welcome to write to me and tell me your age, how long you've been smoking, and refer yourself to some of the questions that you've already talked about, and I will respond to anyone that does that. Because we have received thousands of letters from all over the country, and we do that.
Where are you located? What city?
New York City. Mm-hmm. In fact, there are people here in Philadelphia who drive to New York City once a week to attend our sessions. The sessions are 2 hours long. There are only 8 people in one session at a time. I am there. I am the one that runs the sessions with you. You get a homework assignment at every session, designed to bring into more awareness what is going on.
Thanks a lot for calling.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, bye-bye. By the way, if anyone does want to contact David, we'll be giving his address in a few minutes if you want to drop him a letter or anything. You know, there's a kind of like group approach now to stopping anything, whether it's stopping eating, stopping drinking, stopping smoking cigarettes. I don't know, sometimes I wonder if there's maybe too much emphasis being put on that. You know, for a while it was like this real surprise. My gosh, things can be easier if you have a support mechanism, and it's really great when you realize you're not alone. But, David, do you think that you know, a group is really necessary for something like smoking pot, which isn't a physically addictive substance?
Well, surprisingly enough, it can be physically addicting. People who stop smoking report symptoms of nervousness, irritability, being unable to sleep, loss of appetite, gain of appetite, insomnia. So it can be physically addictive, and it is also, well, it's definitely psychologically habituating. The reason that the group works best is because it facilitates what is going on, what the person needs to know. Think of the brain this way, as a locomotive going down a track 100 miles an hour, wanting to get information. And being in a group and hearing other people share their problems allows you to look at yourself in a new way. Number two is that it eliminates the adversary system of me and you, or you and someone else. It's a group, and we're all there to win, to deal with our problems. So that's why it works better, faster, and makes it easier for the people to do so, because it shouldn't be a struggle. It is, and it shouldn't be.
Okay, well, we're going to go back to the telephones. There's a number of people waiting on the air, waiting on the phone, that is. Hello, this is Fresh Air, and you're on the air.
Yeah, good afternoon. I really have a question before I make a comment, and that is, do you feel there is any room for moderate smoking?
Good question.
I have two answers to that. One is that I have to address myself to every individual. Uniqueness means no predetermined pattern. And I can't sit in judgment of and make a general statement. So the answer is that I have to see what individual is doing what, when, and where, and why. The second statement is that, and this is a theme that you'll hear me refer to many times during our talk today, is that those people who graduate Potsmokers Anonymous are really substance-free. They are as high as they need to be, want to be, desire to be, and getting as much pleasure out of what is going on. So in that way, I would say they're substance-free, period. So you'd have to tell me more about what you mean by moderate drug use.
Well, I try to think that I'm a vegetarian, but occasionally I run down to Levi's for a kosher hot dog. the same way smoking, I used to do it much more than I do now. Used to play in a group, but in recollection, I guess I played the best that I ever played when I was smoking, and then at other times I just couldn't even tune the guitar. There seemed to be no middle ground. Mm-hmm. Partying, sometimes the situation, you're incredibly animated, your conversational abilities and your communicative skills are at their greatest. Other times you fall asleep. I just find that if I do it perhaps once a week, number one, I think that your lungs are a lot cleaner, and so taking it in is like taking your first drag on a cigarette. I think it's going to be at its most potent. In the same way, I didn't get high the first time I ever smoked, but the second time I did, I had a marvelous experience. So I find just doing it in moderation is fine for me. I guess it's different for everyone. Although I have found that in the past I've been getting very down on myself because of the very little that I was performing under the influence. So I guess that is perhaps a common trait of people that perhaps overdo it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, do you want to comment on it?
Well, I would say that if you're happy with what's happening with you, I would have to respect that. Although part of me says, let me reach out a little bit at this point and say, hey, I think it sounds defensive. I'd have to find it on your part as to why you really do it once in a while.
What's wrong with doing something once in a while? I mean, really.
There isn't anything wrong with it. I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with it. If a person sounds defensive, in my opinion, it means that there's some area of awareness that they might be missing.
I'd like to be like Christ, but I don't live my life that way every day. I wish I could. In the same way, I think I'd like to not eat meat ever, because I feel like I might be killing an animal. I might also be putting a substance into my body that it doesn't really need. But
that's why I said I respect what you're saying on one part. And look at it this way. If I would ask you to wear a blindfold and throw a piece of paper into a waste paper basket, you would depend on me to be your feedback mechanism to say you've thrown it too far, too little, a little bit to the right, a little bit to the left. Mm-hmm. However, if I assist you in taking off the blindfold, you are now independent. You can give yourself your own feedback mechanism, and you can do it for yourself. So that's what I do when I say, look, I'm picking up some defensiveness. I want to help if I can help you to achieve even a greater freedom, then it would be my service and my pleasure. And I thank you for that opportunity.
Okay. I appreciate what you're doing for people. I think it's very important.
Thank you.
Well, listen, thanks very much for calling.
Okay,
bye-bye. We're at 387-6661. If you're just joining us, my guest in the studio is David Eisenson. He is a bass player, and he's also a psychotherapist. And today we're talking about his work as the founder of Pot Smokers Anonymous, which is a group that he's organized in New York City. Hello, this is Fresh Air, and you're on the air.
Hi. I just have a couple comments. First, I'd like to identify myself as a person who's smoked for about 10 or 11 years and still smokes quite a bit. I would say I'm more than a moderate user, but not a heavy user. I have a regular job, and I lead a quite active life. I'm involved in athletics as well. And I've really experienced none of the deleterious symptoms that the doctor has mentioned. The second point is that, well, I don't pretend any degree of scientific expertise in the subject. It is my lay understanding that the scientific evidence, medical evidence, regarding the deleterious effects of marijuana are quite inconclusive. He had mentioned that they were, grass could be physically as well as psychologically addictive. And to my understanding, it is not at all conclusively established that grass is physically addicting, although grass as well as jogging or dieting can certainly be psychologically deleterious.
Well, I hope you're not going to wait until the brick falls on the wall before you yourself experience. What is your age, by the way, sir?
I'm 31.
Okay, good. Well, there's going to be some new research that will be published within the next 4 months that will substantiate that the pot can be harmful to individuals. Now, some individuals have a different system. For example, why do some individuals get ulcers under stress and some others get a heart attack? It has to do with their genetic endowment, the nature of their whole environment. So you may be an individual who has a very strong constitution who, in spite of the fact that you're between a moderate and heavy smoker, are doing good, and I'm glad to hear that you're okay, quite frankly.
Thank you very much, but I mean, in those terms, there is no degree of predictability. It's difficult to say, given any kind of statistical population, that X will be harmed by pot and Y will not be. Clearly, some people will be. Not everybody should smoke. Just as clearly, other people won't be. Isn't it more of a individual matter?
Yeah. That was my next question. Why do you smoke?
I enjoy it. I would put myself in the category as the speaker before the last. I enjoy it. It's sometimes just an escape. I like smoking after jogging. I like smoking outside. You know, I mean, just as equally, I like doing either one or more activities without it. It depends, you know.
It's a kind of problem here with words, I think, is you could say, like, why do you eat dessert? Why do you eat ice cream? Why do you see a movie? You know, I mean, if you're not a filmmaker, why do you go to the movies? Someone could say to that, well, I go for escape and for amusement. And you could say, well,
you know,
should be working or should be cleaning your house
exactly
or something.
Certainly anything can be abused. You know, any phenomenon. The sun, human beings have that infinite capacity to abuse or abuse themselves with anything. But I don't think that just the use of a substance is prima facie evidence that it's being abused or that it should be or that the individual should use it.
Well, as I said earlier, when someone calls Pot Smokers Anonymous, I have a tremendous amount of respect for them because they are, in my opinion, pioneers being a new program. And they are going to be dealing with the fact that they are escaping with a substance as opposed to a movie or with a dessert. And I don't, quite frankly, think that there's anything good or bad about escaping. It has to be judged on an individual basis. And perhaps escaping, when it is escaping, is not good. When it is learning or having another pleasurable experience, it is good. It's a matter of words that you have to say.
I would by no means categorize pot smoking as escapism. You know, it can be that equally as well. It can be something else. You know, I have learned a lot about myself through smoking grass, and I continue to. Other times, I just have great goofy times, like with anything else.
Okay, listen. Thanks very much for calling. Really appreciate your comments.
Thank you.
Okay, bye bye now. Hello, this is Fresh Air, and you're on the air.
Yes, I'd just like to say I was tuned in rather recently, and I must say I was very surprised by what I really felt to be the naive nature of the comments made, particularly by coming from a bassist whose music work I respect so much. Myself, I'm a medical student here in the city, and I smoke, and I've been smoking for a long time. And I never really could correlate the apathy than of so many young people that so many people I think naively tie in together with pot smoking. I see so much of this as sort of like a breakdown of like the Protestant work ethic and children in school. I believe I caught a bit of a white paper on NBC the other evening, and there were a couple of kids there saying, well, we smoke and we don't really pay much attention in class and so on. And I really don't think they know why they're in school. I think that's more of a problem in the education system, not with the smoking of pot. It's sort of like a chicken and the egg thing. You know, which comes first, the apathy or the dope?
Well, why do you smoke?
For pleasure. Very simply. I guess it was sort of like the dessert analogy Terry mentioned earlier.
You see, we're very vulnerable, and I don't know what year of medical student you are, but I would imagine that at some point in your education you will find out, for example, that we're very vulnerable to some of our senses. Smoking is a sensual experience primarily. Our ancestors didn't have sugar around, and we used our sense of taste to survive. If something tasted good, it meant it was healthy for us, and if it tasted terrible, it meant it was unhealthy. It might be perhaps poisonous. Now, all that sense of survival has been uprooted by our culture, where we're not, our survival is not threatened. So therefore, our sense of taste, our pleasurable taste, is more vulnerable to all the sugar products that are on the market, which I think are abominable. And I don't imagine there'll be much argument. Yet we're all vulnerable to this pleasurable taste, which I think short circuits the authentic, real sense, bonding sense of pleasure that could be experienced without a substance. And the only way to challenge me is to do it. Find out for yourself.
By not smoking?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I've done this.
How long?
Most recently for about a year.
And what is your age now?
21.
Uh-huh. Okay, you'd have to do it longer.
That's not fair.
Seriously. let me tell you something. Your brain isn't fully developed yet.
That's a tricky question.
That's a clinical fact. That's no doubt about
that.
That's
true, but I really don't know I don't know that I'm missing that much, and I don't know that going for a month sometimes happens without smoking. If I don't know if in that period I haven't developed that awareness, you know, it's really hard to, I think that's a very hard thing to pin down, if I know.
Okay, listen, I want to thank you very much for calling.
I just had one other side comment. I think one thing that a lot of people neglect is that the type of marijuana people smoke, I think, has a lot to do with the way it affects them. The exotic forms that people are smoking, taking to now, the things that cost more than an ounce of gold, the Hawaiians and the Thai sticks and all that sort of thing, have a markedly different effect upon people. This sleepiness that a young man who called up earlier is totally just about non-existent. And I think some studies have pinned down the more electric effects of marijuana to a delta-9 form of THC. And perhaps if it ever came around that an industry applied any money to it, people might just be smoking that which only has the delta-9 form in it. So perhaps that whole sleep and listlessness bit might be gone.
Okay, well, listen, thanks very much for calling. Yeah. Okay, bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Hello, this is Fresh Air, and you're on the air.
Yes, I've got a question for Mr. Isaacson, but in order to ask it, I've got to get a piece of information first. How old is Pot Smokers Anonymous?
A year.
A year. Oh,
almost,
all right.
Not quite a year, quite frankly.
Quite a year. Well, when did you stop smoking yourself? You mentioned that about 9 months ago or something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, yeah. That's about close to 10 months now, I'd say.
Okay. Well, how do you reconcile having started a group counseling people not to smoke before you yourself had stopped?
I know. That was one of the reasons that I decided to put my money where my mouth is. I felt like a hypocrite.
Okay, so you were actually going through the therapy with your first group of students then at the same time.
Yes, anything that I would ask anyone in Pot Smokers Anonymous to do or to experience, I have experienced many, many times. The one thing that I am concerned about is that no one gets hurt, that you do get better.
You know what I'm wondering about? I think the person on the telephone has just brought up something that touched up something in my mind that I've been meaning to ask you, which is it seems to me that what you were doing before and what you're doing now is maybe a little different, in that when people came to you saying, listen, I'm really trying to stop, I think dope isn't being good for me anymore, can you help me? You were responding to a need that was expressed by people, and now you're urging everyone who smokes at all, people who say that they're happy with it, to stop. You know, which is different from helping people to stop who say that they're unhappy with it, but are having difficulty in stopping.
I didn't mean to come across as if I were urging everyone to stop smoking. I would say that that there is a promise of a substance-free life, and I'd like people to check it out. However, I would like them to check it out by learning what's happening with their emotions, how to develop an intimate, ongoing relationship, not simply to stop and go back into some catatonic or some neurotic state that is going on.
I didn't mean to cut you off on the telephone.
No, it's all right. I'd also like to know if you still use alcohol.
I never did.
Oh, you never did?
No, and I don't use tobacco. No, I'm a substance-free person. I indulge myself with a cup of coffee while I'm here at the studio, but at home, quite frankly, I drink a non-caffeinated drink.
Okay, would you consider caffeine as a drug of abuse?
Absolutely. It is one of the major drugs of abuse. And that's being, tests are showing that it's, 2 is not the benevolent substance that we think it is.
Is it addicting or habituating or both?
Both, yeah.
Both?
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks for calling. Okay, bye-bye. If you're just joining us, my guest in the studio is David Eisenson. We were talking Tuesday about his career as a bass player. Today we're talking about his work as a psychotherapist, and a year ago he started a group called Pot Smokers Anonymous. So basically we've been talking about smoking dope and comparing experiences with it, and whether it's been perceived as being useful or something that, you know, makes you tired. And so people, number of people are on the phone waiting to share some of their experiences with us. Hello, this is Fresh Air, and you're on the air.
Hello. I have a question for David that is lurking in the background of some of your questions, I think. And that is, he says that dope smoking is bad. Now, he's saying that dope smoking is bad gives us 3 warning signs. And it sounds like those 3 things are that it makes your mind wander. Now, what I want to know is, why is that bad?
Oh.
That's an interesting question.
I think... When I was in, as part of my training as a therapist, I had to have extensive therapy analysis and psychoanalysis and therapy.
And doesn't everyone have to have that?
No, not all psychologists. No,
to
no.
Analyze yourself. Am I doing the right thing? Just to be alive.
Well, yeah, that's true too. But you see, humans. Well, that brings up another point. First of all. The name of the game is to increase your options. When you're using a substance and it's in your body and it's controlling you, then you are the victim. And the name of the game is that to become a non-victim so that you can increase your options. And if you want to have daydreams or wander, then that's what you do. But people who are intoxicated don't have that options. It's controlling you.
Okay, but I think you can correct me if I'm wrong on the phone, but I think what our listener is trying to say is... maybe there are times when it will even be useful to you to have your mind wander. I mean, like if you're not smoking at a time when the utmost concentration is required, but rather at a time when maybe you want to do some brainstorming and just like edit your thoughts for a later date, or you just want to sit and let your mind wander.
Exactly. And if we don't let our minds wander, we don't have any ideas, we have no new ideas at all, and then we are lost.
All right.
Completely. And so I would say that without mind wandering, the human race is at an end.
Okay.
And so for my money, it's great to let your mind wander.
Great.
Now, if you are a slave driver or a master, you don't want your slaves to let their minds wander. And so if you're on that side of the human race, then you're going to say, oh, it's terrible to let your mind wander.
Okay.
Do as you're told.
All right. So
dope would be incredibly bad.
Well,
point of view.
All right.
Because your slaves' minds would wander all over the place.
I think David wants to respond.
Yeah. As a person who no longer smokes dope, I have found that when my mind wanders, I have a better time than I did when my mind wandered and I didn't remember what in the world I wandered to, from where and where. It has a value. Like one person in the Pot Smokers Anonymous said, I have a drawer full of ideas that I've never used or exploited or had a wonderful time developing.
Uh-huh.
And I think that is one of the functions of mind wandering, is to help relieve your anxieties, to go to a better place. And too many people who have smoked dope have gone to the movies, not remembered the movies, or have forgotten. And the mind went out on its own, like a crazy monkey. And I think that's a drag.
Uh-huh.
Okay, listen, we're about out of time.
Okay.
I want to thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Interesting question.
You're
okay.
Good.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. There's a few people on the telephone. I regret to say we're really not going to have the time to speak on the air. If you'd like to drop us a line with your thoughts, I'll be giving the address for David and also the address here at Fresh Air. If you'd like to put any of your thoughts in writing, that would be real swell. David, I'm really wondering if you have considered at all the effect your comments are going to have, like on the law, for instance, you know, because there's a lot of states that are in a kind of tenuous position now, maybe just on the verge of getting marijuana decriminalized. And, you know, I mean, it could be argued that the statements that you're making would kind of, like, maybe just help push it over more towards against decriminalization?
That would be unfortunate, because I believe that we should. Prohibition doesn't work. It never did work. It never will work. And as far as I'm concerned, people want to get it and get off and do their thing. That should be their privilege, just as that should be the privilege of those who want to be free of a substance. I think that if I had my choice, I would decommercialize it, meaning I think Alaska has that law where you can grow as much pot as you want in your own house and be free to use as what you want to use at your own potency, and take the commercial aspects out of it so that people could be really free. This is, to me, the greatest country in the world. I've traveled around the world. It's the freest. It's the best. I think if my brothers and sisters out there should not be in any way prosecuted or persecuted for wanting to do what it is they want to do to themselves. That's, among other things, the most cherished liberty I've enjoyed in my life, and I would certainly would hope that if anyone used my comments to exploit it in a negative way, I would definitely be very upset about that.
Okay.
And thank you for giving me a chance to clear that up.
Good. Okay. David, thanks very much for returning to Fresh Air this afternoon. I think it's been a really interesting talk.
It's been my pleasure, and I think you and your audience are very beautiful. I enjoy talking to you both very much.
Thanks. I've been here with David Eisenson, who you may know now through two different routes. David is a psychotherapist, and we've been today talking about his work as the founder of Pot Smokers Anonymous. He's also a bass player, and you may be familiar with his recorded work with the Ornette Coleman Trio, of which he was the bass player in the 1960s. And also he's recorded with Paul Modian and with Jackie Byard. And I'd like to say that if you'd like to contact David about the topic we've been talking about this afternoon, you can write him, and I'll give you his address. You can write him at 316 East 3rd Street, and that's in New York, New York, 10009. Okay? You got that again? It's 316 East 3rd Street, New York City, 10009. And if you're wondering how to spell his last name, it's Eisenzon. It's, you're laughing. People tell me, people call up and say, oh, how do you spell that? You never know. If you'd like to write to Fresh Air, we're Fresh Air, WUHY, 4548 Market Street, Philadelphia, 19139. And anything, by the way, that you'd want to send through the station, I'd be happy to pass on to David Eisenson. So, okay, that's it for this afternoon's Fresh Air. Monday on the show at 2 o'clock, we'll be joined by the members of the Philadelphia Jazz Ensemble. At 3 o'clock, I expect we're going to be hearing a program about the Glenn Miller Orchestra. And at 4:15, we'll be joined by Stuart Samuels, Fresh Air's film critic, and Bill Van Wert, who teaches film at Temple University. And we'll, among other things, be talking about the movies of Werner Herzog. David Eisenson, thank you again for being here this afternoon on Fresh Air. That's it for today's show. Fresh Air's production assistant is Danny Miller. The technical director this afternoon has been Joyce Lieberman. My name's Terry Gross. Thanks for listening. Have a very good weekend. This is WUHY-FM in Philadelphia, listener-supported public radio.
Good evening. From National Public Radio in Washington, I'm Bob Edwards.
And I'm Susan Stamberg with All Things Considered.
Terms upon which a community can survive are corrupt, then it will sink. But truth, crushed to the ground, shall rise again, and the city of Cleveland shall rise again, despite this moment of shame which you yourself have occasioned.
If Cleveland's Mayor Dennis Kucinich sounds a bit tense talking with his city council, he can give you some good reasons. The city's banks are calling in their notes, and today's the deadline. Tonight on All Things Considered, Cleveland faces default.
Also this evening, Secretary of State Cyrus Vance returns from the Middle East without a peace treaty.
President Carter speaks tonight. There's speculation that he'll talk about China.
The United States finds it hard to enforce the arms boycott against South Africa and the economic boycott of Rhodesia.
The musical ballroom opens on Broadway. We'll read the reviews to the playwright who says it's not his play anymore.
Tom Shales reviews the film Superman. He thinks it's terrific. NPR's Robert Krowich reviews Super Hype, The Cell. That's not so good.
This evening on All Things Considered, first the news and Diane Diamond.
President Carter addresses the nation tonight at 9 o'clock Eastern Time. His speech will be brief, about 30 minutes or less, according to the White House. The subject is not known, but the presidential request for network time has sparked widespread speculation. Shortly before the announcement of tonight's address, Soviet Foreign Minister Anatoly Dobrynin arrived at the White House, apparently to be briefed on the subject of the president's speech. Officials would not disclose the subject, saying only that...